All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I told you we were jam-packed full of guests today. Next is Gary Loop. He's professor of history at Tufts University and writes for Counterpunch at counterpunch.org. He's a contributor to their book on the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Yugoslavia, Imperial Crusades. And the article I'm looking at here is titled, The Yemeni Toner Cartridge Bomb Story. More questions than answers. Welcome to the show, Gary. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I appreciate you joining us today.
My pleasure.
So I love any article about anything that begins quoting Jeff Huber.
Mm-hmm.
He's my favorite. That guy cracks me up.
I read him on antiwar.com.
Right, yeah, even better. In fact, I'm just going to go ahead and read this. You quoted it. It's worth it. If there's a single substantiated syllable in the entire narrative about the Yemeni cartridge bomb story, I have yet to encounter it in the New York Times. In a series of articles from the 29th, 30th, and 31st of October, our newspaper of tarnished record created enough cognitive dissonance to drive the Dalai Lama to a therapist's couch. Now, you claim in there that's a bit of an exaggeration, but I'm not so sure. I got to admit, I'm pretty confused about this case as well. And we're all walkies out to get us, and so that justifies killing him with a drone attack? Or what's going on here?
Well, my point is that I can't figure it out, really, from the different contradictory evidence that's provided. Number one, initially it was announced that these were packages that were destined for two synagogues in Chicago, and then the British Prime Minister Gordon, as well as the foreign minister, both indicated that they felt that the bombs were obviously designed to go off in flight, which raises the question why they would be addressed to synagogues, which would be a kind of deliberate political or ideological statement. And then the New York Times, Mazzetti and someone else, published an article in which they said that the addressees reflected a kind of cynical sense of humor on the part of Al-Qaeda, because the one name was that of a figure in the Spanish Inquisition, i.e. someone very hostile to Muslims, and the other was the name of a prominent crusader, I think of the 13th century, which kind of raises the question of why they would go out of their way to put these addresses and these names on packages. Wouldn't that kind of arouse suspicion? Why not just send them to any Joe Blow? So the question of where they were headed and when they were destined to go off is one question. And then there's the question of the actual operation of the device or the devices. I take it that these cell phones or some apparatus within the cell phones was supposed to cause a syringe to containing lead azide to initiate the detonation of the petin, but there have been kind of conflicting explanations about that. And I don't know that there's been any follow-up article that resolves some of these contradictions.
Well, as far as I can tell, no, for what's that worth. And I've been trying to read about I've been trying to read about this as much as I can, and especially in preparation for this interview, and I think I'm left with all the same confusions as you, at least.
And the French foreign minister, then, the French foreign minister announced that one of the packages was 17 minutes away from detonation. And the U.S. State Department said, no, that's not our understanding, and certainly it's not the case, the situation with the Dubai device that was discovered in Dubai. So, I think the context of this is that in August, the CIA issued a report, which was then confirmed by unspecified top officials, that Yemen has become, or the Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, based in Yemen, has become the single greatest threat to U.S. security. So it supersedes the threat of Al-Qaeda on the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. So they're assessing this as a major ongoing battleground. Whereas Patrick Colburn writes, I think it's in The Independent, that this is a group of 200 or 300 men that the regime of Ali Saleh in Yemen hasn't taken as much of a threat and isn't inclined to go after with much eagerness.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but
you know,
he's only doing so.
There was a piece in the New York Times Weekend Magazine about, say, a month and a half ago that was, the name of the guy that wrote it, but that's pretty honest for a New York Times piece, and mm-hmm. that was pretty much, I think he agreed with that. He pretty much described Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, such as it is, as a very small group of people, and in fact goes on to describe how the various drone strikes made things worse. That, like, there was an elder in the village who was on his way to tell them that they better get the hell out of there, and he got bombed mm-hmm. too. And yeah. a bunch of women and children killed. Amnesty International documented the cluster bomblets, the so-called duds still lying around waiting to go off and kill more people. And but he ends the thing in the New York Times piece. I think he even ends the thing saying, well, you know, a pretty objective point of view here would be to stay the hell out of here. There's barely anything to worry about, and clearly intervening in, you know, this is the big muddy here. Why wade in? You know?
Yeah.
It could be very problematic. And that was the New York Times kind of version of the Yemen piece.
Right. In May of this year, a deputy provincial governor was killed in a drone strike that just hit the wrong target. At the same time, I read in one article in the last few days that in the course of 2010, U.S. drones have only been deployed for surveillance purposes, which has got to be wrong. But maybe there's some fuzziness in that the U.S. doesn't accept responsibility for a lot of what's going on, but indicates that this is undertaken by Saleh's government, which is in fact carrying on two armed missions against the Ba'athist and Nasserite organization led by former officials of the Democratic People's Republic of Yemen, which merged in 1990 with the North. And then there's the Houthi uprising in the North. So that regime has its hands full with its own problems, and it sees Al-Qaeda as a minor irritant at best.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if the Al-Qaeda narrative is that we can't really successfully overthrow our local tyrannies until we get rid of the Americans first, then all we're doing is making that true.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the U.S. was not terribly interested in these local secessions before 9/11, but then immediately after 9/11, the U.S. demanded that Saleh's regime, and Saleh's been in power, or was in power in the North from 1978, and even though the North was the anti-Marxist Yemen and the South was aligned with the Soviet Union, the U.S. was not on very good terms with Saleh because his government had opposed the invasion of Iraq. But suddenly, he was embraced as an ally in the war against terrorism, and the U.S. demanded that he launch a strike against Al-Qaeda, which almost immediately after 9/11, that resulted in the death of 18 troops and 4 villagers, and didn't get any Al-Qaeda. And are we running out of time? Or?
Yeah, music's playing there, so we got to go out to this break. We're talking with Gary Loop from counterpunch.org. He's got a great article here, well worth your time, about the package bombing. And when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about Yemen and a little bit more about this specific case. Hang tight. It's Anti-War Radio. All right, enough of that nonsense. Back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. We're on chaosradioaustin.org and on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM. All the archives are at antiwar.com/radio. We're talking with Gary Loop from Counterpunch, the great Counterpunch, the wonderful Counterpunch, the only leftists in our society that stuck up for the Branch Davidians, I think. Anyway, So, yeah, check it out. Gary Loop, he wrote this great article about, hey, man, I'm not so sure I'm buying this whole story about what all is going on, or not even sure this story makes sense, what the government's telling us about this plot to blow up planes or blow up synagogues or whatever it was. But one of the things that has got me the most puzzled about this is this thing I read in the Christian Science Monitor that said that the reason that this whole plot was busted was because there was a guy who was in Guantanamo Bay, which must mean that he was some innocent guy who'd been rounded up somewhere.
Jabir al-Faiti,
Well, you go ahead. Tell me the story then. You know his name. You know it better than me.
Well, he was in Guantanamo, I think, from 2001 or 2002 maybe to 2007. And then he was handed over to the Saudis, who put him through some rehabilitation program. And then after getting out of that, he went to Yemen and joined the Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula. And just last week, I read an article that identified him as a double agent. And he's the one who returned to Saudi Arabia on an airplane specifically sent to Sana'a to pick him up and supposedly divulged the plot. And he knew what the numbers on the packages were so they could be apprehended in Dubai and in England. And meanwhile, the woman whose name appears on those packages and who was apprehended was released when it was discovered that someone had stolen her identity, but there's been no further word about an investigation into the person who really planted the packages.
Well, you know, the CIA, they're really losing their touch. I mean, how transparent can you get?
Well, it does look pretty suspicious, doesn't it? And also, you have, I think it's Oman something Airlines, denying that these packages were aboard their planes, and you have one of the Yemeni ministers saying the flights didn't originate in Yemen, and I don't know that there's been any follow-up on those statements, any real investigative journalism on the part of the New York Times or someone to resolve these questions.
Well, and I guess that's how it'll stay, because what's the New York Times but the CIA anyway?
Yeah, and also, so often these stories are, or these situations are created, and they do what they're intended to do. And then even if 6 months later there's an article showing how this was all bogus, as, for example, when the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador in 1990 posed as a nurse and said that the Iraqi invaders had been taking premature babies in hospital incubators and hurling them on the floor. That all turned out to be bullshit, but it was very useful at the time, just like the Niger uranium story. So we may read 6 months or a year from now that this was all orchestrated in order to promote greater U.S. action in Yemen.
Hey, check it out. I got the clip.
While I was there, I saw the Iraqi soldiers come into the hospital with guns.
Yeah.
They took the babies out of the incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
That was all acting.
Yeah, all right. Now, so here's the thing. As long as we're speculating on this, as I think it's perfectly fair to speculate, as long as we call it speculation, I got a big problem with the underbomber from last Christmas who came from Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got one narrative that makes perfect sense, which is Barack Obama had not only been murdering people in Yemen for about 4.5-5 weeks straight in the lead up to that attack.
On the 17th of December and
right.
24th,
Yeah, well, and in November, too, we've been covering it at antiwar.com. In November, before he even gave the West Point speech, and then he gave the West Point speech right about a year ago, and he ended the speech. This is the one where he pretended to promise the beginning of the end of the Afghan war would be in July 2011, which they're admitting this week is nonsense, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the speech, he promised, Yemen, Somalia, you're next. And And so there he was threatening and actually killing people in Yemen in the lead up to that. So it would make perfect sense that somebody there would retaliate by putting somebody on a plane and having them try to blow it up over Detroit on Christmas Day. But here's the thing about that, is that apparently some intelligence agency or somebody helped this guy change planes in the Netherlands. And I interviewed a guy named Kurt Haskell, a lawyer, who saw the whole thing, where they lied and said, oh, this guy's Somali, he's a refugee, don't worry, we do this all the time.
That's Sudanese, I think they said.
Oh, yeah, it could have been. Oh, there you go. You know that story, too. Mm-hmm. So, but they didn't, at the time, they didn't use that as an excuse. Seems like they could have used that as an excuse to escalate, you know, big time in Yemen, and they didn't. Now it seems like another Gulf of Tonkin being created here. Is anybody in the national security state really insane enough to do some kind of real invasion of the Arabian Peninsula?
Well, it looks like there's...
CIA and JSOC are going to be bad enough for the time being?
Well, there seems to be a conflict between the CIA and JSOC. The CIA are basically saying JSOC is screwing it up, and they have bad intelligence. We have better intelligence or capability, and so what they're proposing is that a lot of CIA agents be infiltrated into, I mean, more than presently are there, to determine the targets and also to take control of the drone operation. So maybe, since we're speculating, maybe the CIA is creating events to strengthen their position.
Yeah, well, I mean, this whole thing just stinks to high heaven to me. Oh, guess what, everybody? This former Guantanamo inmate gave us the tracking numbers of the packages.
Well, they haven't even said that. But that's the only conclusion that I can derive.
That, well, I think that one was in the Christian Science Monitor version. Was somebody
okay, well, I didn't read that. Mm-hmm.
And now, and you said, though, that you saw an article that said that this guy was a double agent. Can you recall that footnote by any chance?
Well, it was in the Boston Globe.
The Boston Globe.
So it could have been, you know, just a tiny little item. It could have been...
an AP reprint or something.
An AP... Mm-hmm. It was a longer article. And it could have been New York Times or it could have been AP, but I think with some Google searching you could find... Just type in the name of the guy.
Uh-huh. Along with the Boston Globe.
F-A-Y-T-I, Al-Fayati. F-A-Y-T-I, yeah. Jabir.
Okay. Great. Well, hell.
And I think that the Saudis are trying to present this as a case of successful cooperation with the U.S. One of the interesting things is that Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, on the Arabian Peninsula, issued a statement taking responsibility for this, but it often does that sort of thing. It also took responsibility for a plane crash, I think in Oman, that officials had ruled out as an instance of terrorism. But I think that they have a policy of taking responsibility for things that they find positive, but in fact we're not behind.
Right, yeah. Well, and you know, at this point, all anybody in the Muslim world has to do, or I hate to call it that, but you know, anybody who wants to be part of these guys, all he has to do is something violent and then claim that, yeah, I'm with them. And
exactly.
It's just, it's a movement. It's not a corporation. It's a movement.
Well, yeah, in February of 2002, after the Bush administration had begun its activities in Yemen and pressuring the government to attack villages and so on, this organization called the Sympathizers of Al-Qaeda emerged. And this was not the earlier Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula, which had been losing manpower and support, apparently. But this is a new group who just announced that we're sympathizers of Al-Qaeda, which means that they are Al-Qaeda. And certainly from the point of view of the U.S. administration, it's useful to conflate all of these different groups with Al-Qaeda, even if they're very secular and or religiously very, very different from the Wahhabis in Al-Qaeda.
Mm. Well, and I guess as long as we follow a long war policy where we do nothing but continue to bomb nation after nation, we can just guarantee that there's something that, you know, could be called Al-Qaeda,
yeah,
everywhere from Morocco to the Philippines.
Right.
Like,
and
this forever.
You'd think it'd be impossible, but Fox News shows it's 71%. of those polled say U.S. troops are needed in Yemen.
Oh, man. 71. All right. Thanks, Gary. Appreciate your time, man.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
Everybody, that's Gary Loop from counterpunch.org. Check him out.